Hi, everyone. Welcome to the Real Estate Funds Podcast. Today we have a very special guest, Alan Steinberg. He's the CEO and founder of Park Equity Partners. He's in New York. He's invested in 35 multifamily deals over his 37-year commercial real estate career. So welcome to the show, Alan.
Thank you. Very happy to be here. The name of the company is Park Row Equity Partners. We're based out of New York. We don't invest in New York, ironically, but we are based in New York and we invest in properties throughout the United States.
For sure. Yeah, so give us an overview of the types of multifamily that you look for and what you invest in.
What we usually look for is value-add properties. There's all kind of value-add properties. There's heavy lifting where they're very older properties like C or D properties. We generally invest in B properties. Light value add is what I would say. Excuse me.
Gotcha. And then what markets do you focus on?
Well, when I grew up, I was very young, and I used to like crayons, and I had blue crayons and red crayons. And red, right, seems to be my favorite flavor. So I basically invested mostly red states, or actually I invested just recently, my last deal was in Virginia, which was a purple state.
Awesome. Yeah, and then you invest with operators, correct?
Yes, I do.
Gotcha. And then how does that structure?
And I want you to know something, without being, cynical, the reason why I invest in red states, okay, is very clear. I love blue states. I travel to blue states. I live in a blue state. Is that, you know, if you wanted to play a game, whatever game it is, whether it be baseball, football, or whatever game it is, and you plan to play that game, but in the middle of the game, they change the rules. That seems to what happened in these bluer states. They're regulated, and they seem to change the rules as you go along, and it's very hard to be successful in those areas. Very often, because there are a lot more tenants in this world than there are landlords, the rules are very often skewed against landlords. So therefore, I discourage my team from looking into blue states. That's really why it is. Okay,
absolutely.
People may feel differently.
You
know, I don't want to say anything bad. I mean, California is a great place to visit, to tour, but it's not a great investing environment there.
Yeah, and you obviously have an awesome team to evaluate these deals. Give us the overview of your team. I mean, you have your three sons. You have it seems awesome because you've raised your kids well, and now that you have them in your company, you get to build that special bond with them.
Okay, so to tell your listeners, it's unusual to have one son in your business. To have two is another. To have three is quite unusual. And the way to do that is not necessarily to program them for that. When I was doing real estate at home, yes, they knew what I did for a living, but I didn't say to them, this is what you must do. I basically told them they could do whatever they wanted to do. One, they all graduated college, and some of them got master's degrees, but they all migrated towards the family business. One, because he was doing real estate brokerage, so he decided to see if he could help me. Another was in during COVID, so he was at home, so therefore he came into the office and he found it exciting. Another one was doing engineering and wanted to be more entrepreneurial, and so they all migrated that way. So I do have my three sons. I also have a very special woman by the name of Rinat Basal, who is helping us with our marketing and our investor relations and so forth. So she's very helpful to us. And then actually I consider some of our property managers and our asset managers part of our extended team.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and you seem like you have a pretty tight team. And to be lean like this, you have to look for operators to invest with, because I see vertically integrated companies have, 250 employees. It's insane. And so you having that ability to be, to pick your specific deals, not being forced to pay, all of this overhead costs is beneficial. So what do you look for in terms of when you invest with an operator?
Most thing that I look for is their communication, how transparent they are, what kind of reporting they give, how they communicate with us. Some of that is it's like an interview process. It's like interviewing somebody for a position. So that's really, of course, we look at their track record, and we speak to some of the vendors who talk about them. We look at their reputation in the industry, and I'm not going to use the word from the beginning, but if you check somebody's reputation and you check their name in the industry and you check their track record, and all that adds up to the word trust. There's somebody you could trust, you could work with, right? So.
Yeah, and in regards to the track record, I mean, you've invested with a younger sponsor, and I know a couple of guys that raise capital for them as well and deploy money into their deals. So what do you look for in terms of maybe a younger sponsor as opposed to someone, who's been in the industry for 30 years?
Well, I think it has to do with how they select their properties, where they select their properties, and so forth, right? So that's what I look at. And I diversify also, to be honest with you. Just like, what are the three most important words in real estate?
Location,
Keep
location,
going.
location.
What's the fourth word? All right. So I know you're supposed to ask me questions, so I'm going to answer it, okay? So the fourth word to me is diversification. Because no matter how great the location is, you still should diversify. And therefore, I take that to another level. So I diversify with reference to my properties. I also diversify with reference to my sponsors. So therefore, I could only be sure of myself. I can't guarantee anybody else. So therefore, I'd like to have a number of sponsors who I do business with. So therefore, sometimes a sponsor brings me a deal. I might not do it because I like to spread out my properties amongst different sponsors as well. All the sponsors have to meet a certain criteria in reference to doing business with us, but I'd still rather have more than one sponsor.
Yeah, and do you have like a checklist that you go through
Oh,
when you're
sure.
evaluating?
Yeah.
What does that look like?
Well, what's interesting is I can't take credit for it, but the number one thing on the checklist is the person who's in charge of the sponsor, maybe the CEO, the president. What happens if he gets hit by a bus? That's my first question. Who's going to be running their sponsor? Who's going to be working their back office? Who's going to be making their decisions? Because we are all flesh and blood. And if I'm investing in my own money, that's one thing. But if I'm investing other people's money, you have to be very sure that at least that there is a chain of command with the sponsor as to what happens if the main man is missing. That's my first question. And then there's other questions after that. But that's the first one.
Absolutely. What are the other questions?
Well, again, like I said, the other ones are we want to know how they invest and how they decide to invest and how they communicate to their investors and how they report and what kind of reporting that they give and what their reputation is in the industry and how many properties they've bought and how many properties they look at before they buy a property. That's a good question also, by the way.
What's the ratio you like to see there?
That's an interesting question, Weston. A ratio. I mean, I've heard ratios as crazy as to 100 to 1. I think that might be excessive, but I'd have to say probably 25 to 1 is probably a better number.
Yeah, I've seen 2 to 4 usually, 2 to 4%, the ones they buy.
So I think it's a question of also experience. It's a little bit like the more experience you have looking at properties, the less properties you have to look at to know if one's right. You're a little bit younger. Years ago, they used to say going on dates, you didn't have all the internet and all the other stuff. There were things, something called a blind date. And we used to say, oh, if you date enough within the first 5 minutes of talking to a girl, if she's for you or not for you, that type of thing. So after a while, when you look at a property, you may not know if it's for you, but it's not for you. Therefore, you get a sense of it. So therefore, you don't necessarily have to look. And if you want to look at a specific area, say I want to invest in Texas, or I want to invest in New Orleans, or Louisiana, or I want to invest in Florida, you get a sense of the properties by looking at them and looking at the numbers and Also, it's a process of process of elimination, meaning your due diligence. Hopefully, you allow your due diligence to talk to you, right? You know, I don't want to hear. She's so beautiful. I don't want to hear it that she's this or she's that. The same thing, property. With due diligence, you have to let the numbers talk to you. So as you filter down, the more properties you look at, you check the it doesn't meet this criteria. It doesn't meet this criteria, and therefore it comes down to three or four candidates that you start bidding on. That's really how it's done.
Absolutely, yeah. And you pair the evaluating the operator first, I'm assuming, and then drill down the deal.
Yes, the deal that they send you. But for your listeners, that when you deal with a sponsor, generally, when a sponsor brings a property to you, very often it's not fully baked, but it's almost fully baked, that they have already done their due diligence. And very often when a sponsor brings a deal to you, they may even be hard on the deal. So therefore, hopefully, you know, we are now doing due diligence on somebody who's already done due diligence. So you may want to ask me in 10 years and 35 deals. Now, you mentioned that I've been in the business. My family has been in the business for 55 years. We started the syndication. But I've only been in the multifamily space for 10 years because before that, we were mostly in the office space.
What made you pivot?
Well, first of all, now that looking back, a lot of tremendous good fortune. But we pivoted because the market changed. We had office buildings in New York, and in Lower Manhattan at the financial district. And back in 2012, 2014, people wanted to live down here. So we had small office buildings that were very attractive to turn into residential. And it's not just conversion. It's actually taking them down. So we agreed to do that. We actually partnered and we took down some office buildings that we owned and took out the money. And why didn't we reinvest that in other offices in New York? It's a good question. And I didn't want to say because I knew the pandemic was coming or I knew that there was going to be I didn't know any of that. But why I pivoted.
Pivoted.
It's a great word, by the way. The reason why I pivoted is because I was looking at cash flow. I was looking, meaning that office space in New York wasn't giving great cash flow. The cap rates were so low. So I was looking at residential property that had lower risk, meaning that people weren't going to vacate, and you were getting much better returns. You're getting 8-9% cash on cash out of the box without the same risk that you might have as office space. So that's really why I did it. And why did I leave New York? Is that I had some properties in New York, and I said, oh, well, it's not a big deal. You know, I could fly out to this state or that state, so forth. So I was chasing cap rates at that time, and it actually turned out to be good. And when I started doing it in 2014, 2015, 2016, I started enjoying it so much, so I started selling my other properties and doing 1031s and just doing multifamilies. So by the time the pandemic came, I was out of office space completely.
Yeah, for sure. And then when you invest with the operator, you leverage their experience in that specific
market. That's correct. That's correct. So yes, I if I were doing a deal with myself, then the return or the promote that I would earn would be larger on my investors. But by going with sponsors, it's almost like riding with training wheels. Is that I do my own due diligence, but the sponsors have done due diligence. So therefore, the likelihood of that deal being successful is much higher. And when I invest other people's money, I want to make sure that I can deliver. So I may make less money, and they may make like money, but everyone's going to wind up making. There's a higher percentage of making money when you're doing a deal with a sponsor.
Sure, because you're diversified across different sponsors. Right. How is that structured when you're partnering with sponsors? Is it a co-GP model, and then do you take fees on top, or how does that work?
Every deal is different. Every deal is different. It's a question of how badly the sponsor needs your money, and therefore sometimes it's just as an LP and. We have certain fee structures, and sometimes it's some of the GP money that we get shared. It's depending on how we come into the deal and how big we come into the deal.
Mm-hmm.
But the returns that we project to our investors, because the average investor doesn't really understand some of the promote structure and the waterfalls. It gets complicated. It gets scary. We try to give them returns net of our promote, so they know exactly what their returns are going to be. And if it's attractive to them, if they say, okay, we're going to earn 5% cash on cash and we're going to earn 15% annual return on an IRR, you know, or 20% IRR, you know, at a certain level, they understand that. And therefore, oh, well, you promised this and now we're netting that. It's not such a good thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it's on a deal-by-deal basis, correct?
Yeah, it is.
Have you ever done a fund?
No. I haven't invested in a fund, and I haven't started up on a fund. Because we started as a family office, and we try to hold true to our values that the most important thing that we offer to our investors, in addition to a return, is that they can sleep at night. And trust is very important. And certainly in the environment that you have heard about, there are people who are not trustworthy in every industry, and particularly in the investment industry. So we don't ask people to say, okay, invest with us in a fund, and this way we'll invest when we're ready. We kind of open up an LLC every time we invest, and the investors don't have to give us the money. They can send it right to the closing, or they send it right to the LLC. So if we're investing in a deal in Colorado and Denver, you're putting your money into that Denver deal immediately. It's not being commingled with other funds. So therefore, it gives people more comfort that they know what they're investing in and what they're getting.
Yeah, because they know exactly. I mean, right. They can review the whole thing.
Sure, they do. And it also makes it harder. It makes it harder for us because every deal we start from scratch, right? So, you know, we don't have commitments lined up in a fund or whatever. But we find that it's just a healthier way of doing business. It's how we would want to be treated.
Yeah, I have seen people say that when you have a pile of cash, you get more deal flow and you get to look at the better deals. And maybe brokers might come to you first. But, you know, investors love the transparency from what I've seen. I talked with Rise 48. They launched a fund. Haven't had as much success with that because it's blind. I mean, people don't know what the sponsor is going to invest in, and they want to see the property. They want to drive by it and visit it and review all the details.
That's true. You know, when I hear about people who are investing and who have got hurt in the market, it's always because they were too trusting. So I don't really ask people. I try to be trustworthy, but I don't want people to trust me. So I try to be as transparent as possible.
Yeah, and I talk with Jerry Colangelo about this, and he raises deals on a deal by deal basis. So he works with, you know, family offices more. I mean, he owned the Phoenix Suns, so he works with pretty, you know, large investors, and they still raise money on a deal by deal basis. So they, you know, he loves the transparency in that. And so when you invest with a sponsor, do you like to see them focused on a particular state, or can they be in multiple? Is there like a range of how, you know, big and small they should be, or what does that look like?
Well, what's interesting is that's a very good question. You and I met that indirectly or directly through a sponsor who specializes in one state, right? That's their specialty. Now, they happen to specialize in a very large state, right? That's Texas, right? It's a lot going on there. Texas is bigger than most countries. But that will turn, if I only invest with them, then that turns me into, it doesn't let me diversify around the United States. Yes, San Antonio is different than Houston. Houston is different than Austin. Austin is different than Dallas. I get that. But not that much different. And therefore, if a sponsor says to me, I have a deal in Texas, and I also have another deal in Florida, or I have a deal in Arizona, there's more likely that I'll do more deals with them. Because they are diversifying around the United States. Not that anything would ever happen to Texas. I mean, in theory, Texas could, you know, I don't know, secede from the Union.
Yeah, we just don't know.
It could secede from the Union. It could be, you know, the oil industry could dry up because everyone, whatever, and that could impact not just, you know, the oil areas of Texas. I don't know. But if I could choose, why not choose? We have a wonderful country. Certainly the lower 48. I mean, there are people, I met somebody who invests in Hawaii. True. And you can invest, in Alaska. True also. But the lower 48, wonderful. It's a wonderful country, and there's such diversification here, and therefore, if a sponsor has a region, not every sponsor says they do the entire country, but a lot of they have a region. I like that.
Yeah, it's very important to be diversified. So yeah, now let's talk about capital raising, because you do a lot of capital raising. Your team focuses on investor relations as well. Take us through that process of raising capital. What does that look like?
Okay, so raising capital can't start the day that you need the money. Because the day that you need the money, if we're looking at a deal, especially if we're going with a sponsor, which we generally do, we have, a short window to let them know whether we're going to invest with them. And a short window is anywhere from 2 weeks to 30 days. And I'd say more often closer to the 2 weeks time. So it's very important to develop a deep bench of prospective investors who would like to invest with you. So we do have that. We have established that, and it's growing. Those people who would want to invest. But how do we, and it's very important to stay in touch with them in between deals to know how they're doing and to know how we're doing. And so we've established a newsletter, and we communicate with them and let them know that we're alive and well. And that's the big picture. We're in touch with our investors. And generally, how do we get our investors? How do we raise capital? Word of mouth. Somebody's invested with us and has done very well, and tells a friend, and he tells a friend, and she tells a friend, and tells a mother-in-law, and tells a father-in-law. Basically, that's what it happens, and it grows exponentially like that. We don't really advertise. We don't do that at all. Kind of like word of
Have you
mouth.
thought about it?
Well, there's a certain if we advertise that it's a certain. Certainly with the SEC and so forth, there's certain regulations that you have to go and you have to do certain things. Now, not that I'm afraid of that, but we just haven't done that. Perhaps if we did that, we wouldn't be able to handle the volume, right? Bigger is not always better if you're profitable.
Yeah, and word of mouth comes from being a good sponsor and a good steward of people's
That's
capital.
correct.
And returning capital as well. I mean, I talk with Zach Haptonstall from Rise 48. He's raised a lot of money, I think over $1 billion now. And he really saw success because he started, I think, 7 years ago. And when the deals came full cycle, that's when people told their friends about the company, the sponsor.
What's interesting is that is when you talk about, so your investors or your listeners understand what full cycle means, right? So you could invest in a property, and especially in the multifamily, and generally, if you don't do development, it'll give cash flow immediately. It could be monthly, it could be quarterly, and therefore your investors, they invest for cash flow. But full cycle is either when you refinance the property and you're able to take the money out and get their money back, or sell the property, right? That's full cycle, and sometimes that could take anywhere from 3 years to 5 years to 7 years. And we'd like to think that our investors have referred others before full cycle, right? Because they could you could see that their trajectory in which we were going, right? That we give. We haven't missed a payment, a distribution, whether it be quarterly or monthly. We haven't missed a K-1 and so forth. They see the progress is going. So
Yeah, and your
the
communication's up to date.
communicating, the only reason why we haven't gone full cycle is that we didn't refinance, perhaps because interest rates moved higher, so it didn't give us an opportunity to refinance, or we're not getting the kind of return yet that we're expecting. Right, so we're in year three, and we want a year four. It's just like a fruit. You want to pluck the fruit at the right time. You want to sell it at the right time. So therefore, we are getting investors who are referring others, and we haven't gotten full cycle because they see that they're getting great cash flow. There are some people who say to us, "Why sell it? We like this investment. We're getting 8%, 10% on our money. Why sell the property?"
Yeah, and then you get referrals just from the cash flow.
Yes, we do.
When you raise from individuals, what's the main reason they would invest with you guys versus going straight with the sponsor?
Well, number one is a lot of investors, you know, something is, you know, our investors don't even know who the sponsors are. They don't wouldn't even know how to find sponsors. That's number one. Number two is sponsors may not take our investors. There are a lot of sponsors who have a minimum requirement. Some sponsors have $100,000. Some sponsors have $250,000. I even met a sponsor who has $1 million. So therefore, a lot of sponsors won't deal with the, you know, the more retail investors. And number
What's your
three,
minimum?
100.
100.
And but we make exceptions for younger people like yourself, because we want to encourage young people to invest in real estate, because I did it when I was very young. So if a young person just coming out of college or something, we will take less than 100, as long as that they reinvest in another deal at a higher level. So that's, and the third reason is that they have confidence in me and my team, my sons or whatever, that we have done our due diligence on the deal and on the sponsor. Otherwise, it's just like throwing darts. If somebody said, "Oh, I'm going to go invest in that sponsor," they don't know who the sponsor is, and they don't know the reputation. A lot of the people who invested with me either know me for a very, very long time, or know of me for a very, very long time. So they
Yeah,
feel
and how
that,
do you gain
okay,
that trust?
by reputation, by reputation.
Absolutely.
And you know, you say life is not necessarily a sprint, it's a marathon, right? So you just be honest and do that.
For sure. Do you have
Feel
any
more
favorite
comfortable.
books for investors?
Well, obviously it's pretty standard. The two books that really excited me were, number one is, you know, Rich Dad Poor Dad, which I'm sure you're familiar with that book, which really tells you that if you go to the poor dad is the one who goes to work, gets his salary, and saves his money in the bank, and after 30 years he understands why can't he retire, but yet he was employed. But you know, the poor dad is the one who leaves his job and takes risks and so forth. I mean, the rich dad is the one who takes the risks and so forth. So I like that book a lot. It really tells people you don't necessarily have to give up your job, but if you can invest your money wisely, meaning during the day you work hard for your money. This sounds like a commercial. You work during the day, you work hard for your money, but at night when you're sleeping, you have to make sure that your money is working hard for you, and therefore you invest it. So therefore, eventually, that you will have your money producing money. So therefore, you can have financially freedom. That's number one. So that's one book that I recommend. I happen to recommend, I don't necessarily recommend investing with him because I have never done it before. But Grant Cardone writes a lot of good books, 10X and so forth, where his philosophy is investing in the multifamily space because it generates cash flow with low risk and high returns. So Grant Cardone is a very good a book to read, his books. I think his promotes are a little expensive and so forth. That's something else. But I think that the philosophy that to invest in multifamilies is a much better place. And generally, people you invest with me where they would otherwise put their money in the bank or in the stock market. And I think my investments beat the bank tremendously. And I think in terms of long term, we beat Wall Street also.
Absolutely. Are there any last words of wisdom?
The only words of wisdom that I could give is that I did my first real estate deal when I was 27 years old, and I didn't have enough money, and I actually borrowed some money against my credit card and put together as much cash as I can to put my money into my real estate deal. And you know, to all of your listeners, whether they're in their 20s or in their 30s or 40s, 50s, 60s, or 70s, multifamily space investing is the safest investment that you could do with the lowest amount of risk and the highest rate of return if you do it correctly. So my words of wisdom is start early.
Sure. Yeah, and a big piece of that is doing it correctly. Obviously,
I
doing your due
see you are
diligence.
Western.
Yeah, trying to do my due diligence here. So, well,
And this
thank you for
dude,
coming on the show, Alan.
it's it the I don't know anybody. you know, maybe when you're in the arena, as they say, you know, interest rates are high or cap rates are low and so forth. But think about two things. Here's one more piece of advice. The wealthiest families, not only historically, whether it be the Rockefellers or the Roosevelts or more recently the Kennedys or the Bushes and so forth, or even the Trumps and so forth, real estate absolutely was generational and made them very wealthy. That's number one. So you could mimic that. We don't necessarily have to be billionaires, but what's wrong with being millionaires? And number two is, ask somebody if they invested in something 10 years ago, 20 years ago, 30 years ago in those real estate, how is it doing today? And generally, I'm telling you, I may not be around, you probably will, but in 30, 40 years from now, anything you buy today will be worth a lot more. So get into it now.
Absolutely. It's great. Great words of advice. So if an investor or an operator wants to get a hold of you, Alan, what's the best way for them to stay in touch?
Well, certainly look at my website, which is parkrowep.com, parkrowequitiesep.com. Take a look at my website. That would probably be very helpful. And not only you can get in touch with us through our website, but there's some educational points also that they could learn from it for themselves as well, and why we invest, how we invest, and so forth. We share all of that on our website.
Absolutely. Very valuable. So thank you for coming on the show, Alan. Really appreciate
it. Great. Thank you very much for having me. It's a pleasure. I really do. I'm happy to share because the market is tremendous. There's no competition out there. You can have many more people in this market, and there's just enough properties to go around to make us all very comfortable.
Absolutely.
Thanks for having me, Weston. Have a great day.
Of course. You too.